Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This week, let's give away Caps tickets. Congrats right now to caller 10 at 800-636-1067. You're winning two tickets to see the good guys take on Montreal on Halloween night. For tickets and more information on the Capitals schedule, go to thefandc.com/contests. Fired up to make somebody a winner. We'll have one last pair of tickets to give away tomorrow ahead of the Blitz right here at this time on Grant and Danny. The Beltway Blitz today to cover the Commanders, the aforementioned Capitals, looking to make it two in a row tonight at home, and the NFL. So let's get to it. Our buddy Chick Hernandez, watch him on television on Channel 9, WSA-TV in town. Chick, the Commanders are 4-2 after their loss to the Ravens with a great chance to get to 5-2. What's the demeanor been like around the facility this week after a loss in a kind of a statement game?
Well, I think if you paid attention to them at all in the locker room afterwards, and if anybody watched any of their digital stuff, Andrew Wiley would come off the field and say, just a lesson learned. Just a lesson learned. They played a really, really good Baltimore Ravens team and felt like they were in it till the end. And they were without Brian Robinson. So there's a lot of positives that came out of that. I don't think they blinked. I just think it's here we go, next game. And that's really due to the culture, as we've talked about ad nauseum, that Dan Quinn has built. They're ready to rock. Oh, my God, I just used one of Dan Quinn's phrases. What's going on here?
It happens. The osmosis happens, Chick.
It's insane, yeah.
After a couple of years of Ron Rivera, we just kept saying more so than anything else a lot, and we didn't even know we were doing it.
Yeah. I really do. What? What are you talking about?
More so than anything else, okay. Next thing you know, you'll just be finding your true north all of a sudden. Chick, what's the most important thing for them to take care of business this weekend?
I think having B-Rob back is bigger than they would really want to admit. If they had him in last week's game, I think whether it's a different outcome or not, I think it's a different offense. So I think that's the biggest thing, is to once again establish the run. And Baltimore held him 52 yards under their average, their game average. So that's a huge deficit. And I think having him back in there, I said yesterday, you know, when he rounds the corner, comes through the hole, DBs have a business decision to make, and some want to miss. And then Austin Eckler comes in and he makes a miss. So I think that's your key, at least for it is for me. I think the defense is still coming. Obviously, you got some communication issues that Joe Witt Jr. talked about today, but I think they're going to be okay.
Speaking of this offense getting back to normal with the running game, how about Jaden Daniels winning Rookie of the Week offensively for the fifth time in 6 weeks?
Yeah, I got a problem with that. Okay, now ultimately, and look, I love what the kid is doing, and for years to come, this is going to be a lot of fun. Okay, and it's a popularity contest. That's what it is right now, because Caleb Williams, DC native, has had two back-to-back games where he's had better numbers, and he's got them on the Bears on a 3-game win streak. Granted, it was Jacksonville, who I think is still in the league. Is that right?
Technically, yeah.
Technically. But it's a popularity contest, and the Commanders, Jaden, are the still hot topic in the league. Now, having said all that, the kid is still performing at a very, very high level, and I think you're going to see some huge numbers come this week.
How do they replace John Allen, or do they? I mean, is it, it's not just Johnny Newton gets more reps. There's something else has to happen, right? Whether it's leadership, the production. How is this defense is already struggling, Chick. What's next?
Yeah, I don't know how you replace Jonathan Allen, other than everybody, as Joe Witt said today, we had, I think, four plays where they didn't communicate or get the proper communication. And, you know, there's a process. Communicate it, acknowledge it, and execute it. And four times it didn't happen, and they were gashers. Big plays. So I don't know. What I do like is the Mike Sammerstill, got his first pick. And I just sat down with Daryl Green. You guys did it on your station as well. I just sat down with Daryl Green for a half an hour and listened to him talk. And I'm sitting there watching. And Mike Sammerstill is the only DB who reached out to Daryl in the offseason and worked out with him. We're seeing a future, not as fast, but we're seeing a future guy who's going to be a leader in that locker room, even at this rookie season. So I think those guys have to just step up even more with the absence of Jonathan Allen.
I love that little nugget there. Sandra's still smart enough to reach out. Just tells you so much about the kid, man. That's a rookie doing that this offseason.
It's huge.
Yeah, for sure.
It's absolutely, because another cornerback who was told to do it didn't.
Yeah, that's pretty telling. I want to ask you about DG before we let you go, because it's his weekend. Yep. He's going to get a key to the city. You obviously, more so than just about anybody else in town, more so than anything else.
More so than anyone else. Okay, it really is.
You were here. I mean, I think my first time being out there was 99, end of his career. You were here for a good chunk of his career. He was the old man in the locker room when I was there. But what do you remember about Green as a player and then the foray into kind of the post-playing career?
Well, I'll give you another nugget. I've been honored. I've been asked to be on the field at halftime to help with the ceremony.
Nice.
And that's very cool.
Very, very, very cool. I will become a DC kid again when that moment comes. But what I remember was, he didn't blow you off. You know, right now we're in that locker room. We get a lot of blow offs. You know, and it's happened the last couple of years and stuff like that. But Daryl Green, once he was, his agreement with the media was, let me get dressed and I will talk to you. And he did. And he gave long, thoughtful answers. So I remember that about him. And just the fact that, you know, as fast as he was, and he's known for, running guys down, Daryl Green didn't mind sticking his nose in and hitting somebody. If you look back at some of the tapes, he waylaid some people with that little body. He just was a guy who played football. That was not him. He was not, football was not him. He played football. He was so much more to the community. And the fact that he's come back here, as he says, after 20 years, because of prior ownership and all the BS that was going on there, this is huge for the area. And I've been told that the alumni turnout for this one will be the biggest for one of these ceremonies. They're all coming back. And, we're talking guys from 1983 on to 2002 during his career.
That's great. Chick, well, congrats on that, man. That'll be really cool to watch. Appreciate the time, as always.
Thank you. Appreciate it, man.
Yeah, man.
Yes, sir.
Hit that Capitol sounder for me, Darius. Our pal Sammy Silver covers the Capitals. That's why she's going to talk about the Washington Capitals here on the Beltway Blitz. Sammy, how cool was Jacob Vrana getting a goal in his first time back in the Washington Capitals sweater? Just what did that mean to him and the guys around him? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, no, it was really a full circle moment. I know for Jake, it meant a lot for him to score, not only, at Capital One Arena, where it had been, over, 1,300 days, but in front of fans, where it was even longer since he had that first goal in front of, a home crowd of Caps fans. It was really special to him. He said he's really, enjoying his time back in D.C. It just feels like home to him. It always has, so... him to be able to get that goal was just huge for him and his family and the Caps organization as a whole.
What deets do we need to know about tonight? The Caps are playing another really good hockey team at home. They could get 4 points against Vegas and Dallas in consecutive games. That would be really impressive.
Yeah, no, it'd be really good. I think for Washington, what the Caps have to do is they have to stick to their game plan, not try to overthink things, just play a simple game, play the same game plan that they played against Vegas, try to, up the ante on offense and really keep trying to maintain pressure and possession. That's really going to be the key against a team like the Stars that have Rupe Hintz and, so many different offensive weapons. For Washington, they've got to stick to the game plan. The defense, Jacob Chychrun and company have to keep jumping up in the rush, and all the lines just have to keep gelling, as they gel. And if they keep it simple, it should be no problem.
Sam, what was the difference between game one and game two? New Jersey is so fast that it made the Caps look slow in comparison. I didn't feel that same way against Vegas, although I feel like they can move a little bit as well. What was the difference in terms of how the Capitals played?
Yeah, I think it was different in the sense that they had a game under their belts, right? I mean, you go into a game like the season opener where you haven't played yet and you're dealing with all these new guys in the lineup, but at the same time, you know, New Jersey's already 3 games into their schedule. You could definitely tell, you know, in that season opener that, you know, Washington hadn't played a game yet. New Jersey had played 3. The players said they felt that way, too. I think, you know, in the second game, it was just, you know, they were back in the rhythm of it. You know, they were talking with each other, communicating, you know, everything was going as simple as can be. You know, it was just hockey to them again. And again, it's after a long off season, when you're incorporating so many new faces, when you get in an opener against a team that's, you know, already been the rhythm of everything, especially a team like New Jersey, like you said, is so fast, you know, it can really throw you off. So I think for Washington, you know, the difference in that second game was, okay, we know the mistakes we made in the first game. We're not going to make those again. We're just going to stick to our game plan, play simple. You know, we're in the rhythm of it now. We know what to expect, and you can see it on the scoreboard.
Do you make much of Ovi on the right wing? Whenever that happens, it seems like there's this massive reaction. And then you watch the games, and he's almost never on the right anyway. So I don't know how much I should really care about that. It is odd, but it tells me that they're a little bit left-handed. It seems like they've got, I don't want to say too many, but they put the team together with a bunch of lefty shots.
Yeah, I mean, talking to you know, there's some differences between playing on the right and left, but really it's only on the face-off, you know, like you said, you know, once you get off the draw, you know, you can pretty much go anywhere, and he kept going left, you know, even if he was on the right side. And then I think as the game went on, he kind of got more in sync of, okay, if I'm on the right this shift, I'm on the right side. And then there were some shifts where he went to left wing and Protas started on the right. It's just, you know, for him, it's all about just, you know, getting his chances and getting to the open ice and finding the space. So, yeah, like on the draw, sure, it can look a little funky, but it's nothing to, you know, really, you know, shake up too much, just because, like you said, yeah, I mean, he's going to go left and players are going to talk to each other and find the open space out there. So nothing too crazy.
Sure, my mic on. Sammy, thank you as always.
Yeah, thank you.
Talk soon. Hit that NFL sounder, please, Darius. PJ Glasser joins us from the BetQL app to go around the National Foosball League. At this point in time, PJ, is anybody great?
I would say, I mean, the Chiefs I still like. Danny, you know, they haven't played their best football. They're still undefeated. Their defense hasn't given up more than 28 points since the Super Bowl against Philly back in 2022. So I still think the Chiefs are great. I think the Ravens are great on offense. If the defense can come around, they're going to be really good. And I would say Detroit, but that Hutchinson injury I think is really going to hurt them moving forward.
I actually want to dabble down to college football with you, if you don't mind, because when I occasionally bump into PJ in the office here, and almost always it's when one of us is going to the bathroom, I will say. Like, I'm walking in or he's walking in.
Okay.
I'm like, oh, PJ, what's up, dude? I never see you, like, in other parts of the building. I don't know why that is. He works downstairs. I work upstairs. But when I see you, I always ask you about college football, and I want to do that here. Georgia, Texas has my attention and the rest of America's attention this weekend. First of all, what's the line looking like, and how do you handicap that game?
So Texas is 4.5-point favorites, Grant. They were 1.5 on the look ahead, 3.5 on Monday, and now all the way up to 4.5. I like Georgia, fellas. I know Texas, eye test-wise, looks like the best team. My problem is their first 6 games, they haven't played an offense that can throw. Michigan can't throw. Oklahoma can't throw. Their top 5 receivers were out on Saturday. Their offensive line was banged up. Carson Beck's a top 10 pick. I know Georgia's skill position players aren't as good as what they normally have, but this is by far the best team that Texas is going to play. And this is the first time Georgia's an underdog in their last 50 games. I think when you get a team like that,
wow,
that isn't used to being in this spot, they tend to play pretty well. So Kirby's going to have his guys ready. It's going to be an awesome game. I think Georgia keeps this one close, if not wins it outright. So I like Georgia in that game.
50, you said, straight games as a favorite?
50 straight games.
Wow.
Yeah, I'll have to go back to season opener 2021 against Clemson.
That's a show. What about Bama, Tennessee? Last I saw, I think Bama's laying 3 as favorites in this game. Tennessee has been strong at the quarterback position. What do we think here?
Yeah, Bama laying 3. I would just take him on the money line, guys, because Kellen DeBoer, I mean, his MO going back to last year with Washington and what we've seen already in SEC play with Bama, his teams play everybody close. They play the level of their competition. It doesn't matter if you're a top five team or one of the lesser teams in your conference. Last year, guys, Washington played 10 straight games that were decided by 10 points or less. They won all those games. And then already this year, we've seen Bama play Georgia tight, Vanderbilt they lost to, South Carolina tight. So they play everybody close, but DeBoer's excellent in these big games. It's one of the big reasons he was hired to be the guy after Saban. So I like Bama. Much like Texas, Tennessee hasn't played an offense this year that can really challenge them through the air. Milroe and Bama are going to be able to do that. So it's going to be a close game, which is why I don't want to lay the 3. But I like Bama to win, so I take them on the money line.
Let me go back up a level, PJ, to the old NFL. There are a couple teams that haven't performed yet. We're making excuses for them or explanations even. But thinking of San Francisco most specifically, how sure are we that San Francisco is going to be there at the end, right? Or is this one of those years where it's that nothing goes right and they're 6-10, and then next year they're back in the NFC title game?
I think it's the latter, yeah. I think that's what it is with them, Danny. It's just, you know, they've had so many runs where they've been deep in the postseason, and obviously they've had injuries like the last couple of years, but they've been able to overcome it and then come playoff time, kind of get going. But with the McCaffrey injury now and Debo's in and out, Kittle's in and out, it doesn't feel like the same San Francisco. With the ascension of the other teams in the NFC, obviously with the NFC North doing, how Washington's been playing, you know, Tampa and Atlanta maybe in the NFC South. I just think the NFC as a whole is a lot better too. These teams are kind of gaining ground on the Niners while it feels like this might be kind of the year where they slip up a little bit.
PJ, great to have you on our Blitz, buddy. Thank you, brother, and be good.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, PJ.
Check him out. PJ Glasser is over on the BetQL Network. We're Grant and Danny. You are locked into the Fan. We're taking you up to 6:30 this evening. Let's get you a Commanders stock report as they get ready to head in to their matchup with the Carolina Panthers next on G&D.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We are excited for the start of the football season here on Grant and Danny, but we do know that folks around us may have been losing loved ones. The exclusive sponsor of our show, the law firm Kondori & Murad, can guide you through the difficult probate administration process that will help you to bring clarity and closure to a loved one's estate. Schedule a free consultation with their probate and estate planning attorneys today. Visit kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them G&D sent you. That's kmlawyers.com. It is time to get you a Commanders stock report as we get ready for Washington's game with Carolina on Sunday at home, a chance to get to 5-2.
Let's throw a little stock report up, Darius. Who leads this team in sacks? Rhetorical question. Grant knows because it's his job to know. But if you're out there, Radio Land, you're listening, you're going, is it Farrell? Is it maybe John Allen? It's Dante Fowler Jr. Increased role, probably. No John Allen. Maybe Dorrance Armstrong banged up. All of a sudden, number 6. has shown up a little bit more over the last couple of weeks. I would give him a nice, tidy little stock report up with 5 tackles for loss, also among the team leaders, and he leads the team in sacks.
Let's go with another positive. News trending up on Brian Robinson. Did not play against the Ravens. Running game missed him dearly. Only played in the first half against the Browns. Had just 18 yards on 7 carries. That was okay because he scored 2 touchdowns. No one really thought or talked about it. But 2.6 yards per carry. Wasn't really himself. 2 of his last 3 games, he's averaged under 3 yards per carry. Because remember, the Bengals game, 16 for 33. Now the Browns game, 7 for 18. Didn't play against the Ravens. So he's basically had one really good game over the last month. So the stock, you could say, is down on the production and on the health. But the 25-year-old is coming back. He is having a good year, 4.5 yards per carry. And I think we saw once and for all how important he is to this offense, to this running game, when he missed against Baltimore and they weren't able to run the football. Also, I've posted this on Instagram and on Twitter. You can check it out at Grant H. Paulson. But I weirdly put together this graph. Like, I went to a website and made a pie graph just for the visual of it.
Good for you.
Of the touches for Commanders players offensively so far this season. The touch graph, if you will. And Brian Robinson, that sliver of pie that he gets credit for, is the biggest of everybody else's, obviously, is their RB1. But I think it's just revealing as to how big a piece to this puzzle he really is. He's having a good year. They need him back. They need him healthy. They need him slamming the ball in between the tackles.
Broken record a little bit, but my guy Austin Eckler. I think we really need to understand what's happening here and how valuable he is to this offense. I know they went on the road to Arizona and took out all their power tools and had a demonstration for Arizona, but this is a dude that is 7th in the league. I say again, 7th in the league in yards per target. He's up there with Alec Pierce, who catches a deep pass every week. Jamar Chase, Sam Laporta, Jaden Reed, Nico Collins, Jameson Williams. What of all they have in common? They are receivers and one tight end there in Sam Laporta. 7th in the league in yards per target is Austin Eckler, catching passes at or behind the line of scrimmage. It is impossible to quantify how effective he has been, and he's the easy button on this offense. We think of easy as DeSean Jackson going deep or Tyreek Hill going deep to bust the defense. The deal is he's making first down chain moving plays that kind of get lost in the sauce. Doesn't have a ton of TDs, but everything else among the league leaders in yards per target, yards per touch, yards from scrimmage. He would lead the team in yards for scrimmage, but he missed a game due to injury. He has been fantastic for Washington.
So this is health related, but Dorrance Armstrong has not been a full participant at practice over the last couple of days. He came off the field injured, didn't finish the game against the Ravens. He was on a bit of a roll, had a half sack against the Bengals, then a sack and a half against the Cardinals in a breakout, then he had a sack against the Browns. So he had 3 combined sacks over 3 games going into that Baltimore game when he got hurt. He was coming off of performances where he had 2, 3, 1, 2, and 1 quarterback hits. He's hit the quarterback every single week prior to the Lamar Jackson-Baltimore matchup. This is a guy they paid good money to start at defensive end 1. He's the 27-year-old that came over from Dallas who played with Dan Quinn before. I like what he's actually done. It seems to me like he is a pretty good player. But the stock is down because after a fairly quiet early performance against Baltimore, then he got hurt. I don't know if he's going to play or not. So this isn't really about his performance at all, but there are questions about his health. They already don't have John Allen. They already don't have Javonte Jean-Baptiste. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I always want to call him Jason Pierre-Paul. They don't have Jason Pierre-Paul, to be clear.
They don't have him at all.
He definitely will not be available this weekend.
Well, he's not going to play for Washington?
Questionable.
Okay.
I'm told he's questionable.
Jason Pierre-Paul.
They could still sign him.
Mm-hmm.
But I know who isn't going to play.
Mm-hmm.
Is Javonte Jean-Baptiste, JJB. Let's just do it that way. So they need Dorrance Armstrong, and his health is down, so I'm going to put the arrow down right now on him.
I hate to pile on, but just noteworthy, as a secondary is struggling, as a group that can't really stop the pass and there's no end in sight, last year's first-round pick, Emmanuel Forbes, can't even get activated. Who do you have to beat out here? It's not as if it's Deion Sanders on one side and Darryl Green on the other. This is not a crew of juggernauts, and you can't crack the lineup. He's been inactive here of late. So that is a troubling trend for Emmanuel Forbes.
4 plays last week before not playing this week.
Yeah. Again, it is not going particularly well for a guy. Remember, they were trying to sell as, hey, let's give it a shot. Let's see what happens. Lasted all of a couple of weeks.
We've talked a lot about the offensive line playing pretty well. Andrew Wiley had a couple of impressive pancakes this past week. I think we could just acknowledge that he's played very solid football at right tackle. Hasn't been perfect or clean all the time. You're occasionally going to see tackles in this league get beat and give up a sack. But Andrew Wiley, through six games, has been far from the problem that everybody kind of penciled him in as. My point all offseason was he finished a lot better last year than people think. He gave up 9 sacks, 2 straight years, Chiefs and Washington, and that's all anyone wanted to talk about. But if you separated like the first 2/3 of the year and the stretch run, kind of played like a different guy, I would say. He has picked up where he left off. He's been very, very solid at right tackle. He is a guy that's very popular seemingly in the room, good buddies with all the other linemen, 30-year-old veteran who was at one point in time undrafted out of college at Eastern Michigan. Andrew Wiley, a couple of times Super Bowl champion, arrow trending up.
His running mate on the opposite side, Brandon Coleman. I think we've forgotten about this because of how much fun all this is, right? How well Jaden Daniels is playing, how this everything sort of looks right in terms of their program and the front office and stuff. One of the big deals of this offseason is idiots like me screaming, hey, you're drafting a rookie quarterback you're turning the franchise over to. Wouldn't you do everything possible to make sure it doesn't get slammed into the ground? Wouldn't you do everything possible to make sure this offensive line is excellent and you give them every option possible in the passing game just to make things as easy as all heck? And they're going, watch this. Journeyman, backup swing tackle, and third rounder that a lot of people think is a guard. And they're sort of walking around nodding. And I'm going, oh my God, what a terrible plan. Sorry, the plan's great. Brandon Coleman plays half the time like they're the Florida quarterbacks with Tim Tebow and Chris Leak, and it's working somehow. But Brandon Coleman, arrow trending up.
Mikey Sanristil at his second position. They started him in the nickel. That's what he was drafted to play. That's eventually where he's going to settle in and I think be an excellent player for a long, long time. But out of necessity in a pinch, they kicked him inside. Excuse me, the outside from inside. And kicked Noah Igbinoghene inside because Sanristil, in addition to being their best nickel, is their best corner as well. And so now he's playing technically out of position. This is a former receiver who is very, very cerebral. You see that when he jumps some routes and has a pretty good idea of what quarterbacks are doing. Why is the arrow up? Well, in addition to him getting more comfortable on the outside and I think playing better, he's broken up a pass in 2 straight games, 3 of his last 4. He picked off his first pass against the Ravens. And it was a Johnny on the spot, let's make a play on the ball kind of interception. Didn't read anything out or jump it, but Lamar Jackson missed, targeted a throw to his big tight end. Even with a big catch radius, it was too hot and too wide. Off his palms, up into the air, and Sanristil made the play. He's always going to make that play. He's been doing it since he helped Michigan win a national championship with a pick 6 in the title game. He's a baller, and I'm a big Sanristil guy. He has been good since day one at training camp, and he continues to come on. The 24-year-old who Washington drafted in the second round at number 50 overall is a legit player.
Larry Izzo, take a bow. Special teams coordinator, right? Austin Seibert signed in the middle of the week, gets NFC special teams player of the week when he does. There have been no disasters on kick returns, punt returns. Everything is a seamless operation to this point. And if you're good, that unit sometimes can derail you. They can be your undoing if you aren't able to spend the resources there. Those guys have been coached up, disciplined. They fly around. We've noticed this multiple times. They lay wood on those returns. They're kicking it inbounds, letting guys return it because they know they're about to lay the smacketh down like The Rock in 2000 on Monday Night Raw. They are playing hard. They're playing well for Coach Izzo.
That is your Commander's stock report on Grant and Danny here on The Fan, with you until 6:30. There's some stunning college basketball news with one of the local programs that I didn't see coming. I don't know how many people super plugged in saw this coming, but massive enough development that we certainly got to stop what we're doing to talk about it next, right here on The Fan.
Breaking news from college basketball. Virginia Cavaliers head basketball coach Tony Bennett is retiring, per Jeff Goodman and several other sources. The school has announced a news conference for 11 a.m. tomorrow in Charlottesville, where it will be streamed. Bennett guided the Cavaliers to the 2019 National Championship, their first ever in men's basketball, and had just signed an extension in June of 2024. We'll have more on this breaking news coming up. Byron Kern on The Fan.
Wow. Tony Bennett retiring, University of Virginia head basketball coach, national champion. What's his legacy as a guy whose teams got to the tourney so many times and played his way? Defensive first, oftentimes struggled to recruit offensively because of that, but one of the great, most successful college basketball coaches certainly in the area in a long, long time. We'll react to that news next right here on The Fan. Pretty stunning breaking news into us here at 106.7 The Fan. Welcome back to Grant and Danny. There aren't details yet, and I don't know when we'll get them, but Virginia head coach Tony Bennett is stepping away. He is retiring. This is being broken in a couple of different places, but initially it was the Field of 68, which is a college basketball media network, that had this. That is pretty staggering, kind of stop you in your tracks news. This is a young, highly successful head coach at the University of Virginia,
mm-hmm.
who has won a national championship, who has that team as a perennial power in its conference in the country. He's been there since 2009, 2010, first tournament run in 2011, 2012, and they're now a mainstay in the tournament. And it sounds like, and we don't know why, we'll have to keep figuring out what the details are, he is retiring immediately.
He is one of those dudes that wears it. You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't, you know, drain 70 pounds of moisture like Gary Williams used to or John Thompson back in the day on the sideline, but it weighs on him. You can see how much it matters to him, you know, just that constant weight of the world that he carries. And I wonder if that's, you know, I'm just speculating, maybe it was the stress, but just put that aside for a second. That's a great basketball coach. So there's a couple different ways to do it in college hoops, and it's morphing now with all the transfer portals and, you know, the NIL, and we're in a new landscape. We'll figure it out in a second who's as the dust settles.
Exactly.
But for a few years, it was the Calipari method, where it's you go get the McDonald's All-American, you tell them, I'll make you an NBA player, and you got more talent than everybody else, and we'll see what happens. This was I can't get the five-star, and I'm not even going to try to. What I'm going to do is get people that are willing to come here and work their you-know-what's off,
yep.
grind it out, play defense, and have to compete against the Dukes, who can rearm, the Carolinas, who can rearm, and now to a degree lately, Florida State and a couple other programs that are really, really good, and you get one seeds out of that? I mean, listen, they've got NBA players, but it's not the lottery pick guys. It's the Justin Andersons, the Malcolm Brogdon, a really good NBA player, but like, you know, Ty Jerome and DeAndre Hunter and
DeAndre Hunter was a lottery pick.
Yeah, but these are not the superstars, right?
And was on that national championship mm-hmm. team, not, by the way, as a coincidence. I think the most talented team in terms of NBA guys they had. Ty Jerome was on that
yep.
team, who made it to the NBA. That's the team he won the championship with. But Tony Bennett, to announce his retirement, it sounds like at a press conference tomorrow, it's being reported, at 11 a.m.
Mm.
And it's not going to be a this-is-my-last-ride press conference. From what we're hearing, he is announcing he will be retiring immediately as of 11 a.m. tomorrow. Now, there's going to be critics that'll talk about the lack of success in so many tournaments. Obviously, they were very offensively challenged over the years yeah. based on the way that he operated and ran things. But he was a hell of a coach at Virginia. You look at their preseason rankings and where they ended up as, you know, their high-ranking point. In 2013, they were preseason 24. They got to third. The year after that, they were ninth. They got to second. Sixth to third. Eighth to sixth. Unranked to first. Fifth to second. 11th to fifth. There was a year where they were ranked 18th before the year and finished second. I mean, just some really, really good coaching along the way. One of my favorite college basketball experts is Patrick Stevens, who you see in the Washington Post every year during the tournament as their bracketologist. Does just an amazing job covering college hoops. He's joining us now. Patrick, I can't imagine you know what's going on, but I guess we should start there. Were there rumblings of this in the circles that you operate in?
I certainly didn't think it was necessarily going to happen on October 17th or something like that. But I think, as you've seen over the years, a number of coaches, you know, call it quits in this era, whether, you know, Jay Wright's a guy that comes to mind. You think about Bob Stoops in football where, you know, these guys have a lot of money in the bank, presumably, certainly should. And, you know, the world of college sports has changed a ton over the last 5 years or so. And so if you don't necessarily have to deal with it and you don't want to, well, it's not like previous generations where you're still trying to, you know, you got to make that big salary. I mean, he's already made plenty of money. And, you know, I think his legacy is pretty well cemented, not just for what he did at Virginia, but at Washington State before that. So probably didn't see the timing of it coming, but if you had told me that he wasn't going to coach into his 60s, I certainly wouldn't have been surprised by that at all. I believe Tony's 55 at this point. So, you know, maybe would have thought another year or two, but gosh, you know, it's really not that startling to me that he would choose to call it a career at this point.
Just, I think the timing of on the precipice of a new season, and so many of us kind of blindsided, seems maybe like the big surprise. Patrick's on Twitter. You should follow him if you like college hoops. Discourse with a one for the eye. D1 scores.
So I'll give you an idea on, you know, on the timing of it all. There's a couple variables in there. One, you could look at it as the Dean Smith scenario, right? Remember, he stepped down in 1997 coming off a Final Four, and everybody was stunned him doing that in October. Bill Guthridge takes over for him, and the argument that Dean Smith made was, you know, I don't want to walk away at the end of a season. I want to see if I can recharge, and you know, if I don't feel like I'm up to it in October, then it's probably time to walk away. So maybe that's some of what's going on there too. Another variable, possibly, you know, is who gets to take over, right? On October 17th, you really don't have very many choices. You're almost certainly going to elevate somebody from your staff. You look at the Virginia staff, they're one of their two associate head coaches is Ron Sanchez, who had a brief run, I shouldn't say a brief run, he was like 72 and 78 over 5 years at Charlotte and hung a CBI banner while he was there and has been, aside from those 5 years, has been with Bennett going back to his Washington State days for the last 20 years. He followed him from Washington State to Virginia and then now on to back to Virginia when he got the associate head coach job a couple summers ago. So is that a scenario where you're trying to, you know, help one of your colleagues out? Tough to say. Who knows? I think those are questions better answered by Tony Bennett than by me. But there's certainly you know, a couple of those types of things that would help at least explain the timing of it as much as anything else.
Can you quantify how great a job he did at Virginia, Patrick? And I guess what I'm thinking of here is when I was just a little tiny kid, I don't even remember this, but you get like those Ralph Sampson years where they're the number one mm-hmm. seed. And my adolescence, it's Harold Dean and Norman Nolan and, you know, Curtis Staples. And they couldn't get mm-hmm. better than like seventh or eighth in the ACC because everybody was incredible in that conference. And nobody was winning there. No one was doing anything for, it seemed like, decades. And he brings this group to be the fact that it's now routine. They're in the tournament. They're a one seed. They got a national championship. Just unbelievable to me where they were when he started versus now. Your thoughts?
I want you to think about this. When Tony Bennett took over at Virginia, it had won one NCAA tournament game in the previous 14 years.
Wow.
I mean, that's how much of an afterthought that they were. They won a game in the 07 tournament with Sean Singletary and J.R. Reynolds and all those guys. I think it was a 5-12 game. They shared the ACC regular season title that year. And so for them to become what they have become certainly, I think, exceeded just about everybody's expectations. I remember thinking, when they hired Bennett, it's like, great. They've got a guy that's going to give them an identity. You know they're going to play defense. And maybe this will be a little bit like what NC State was like under Herb Sendek, which was a reliably good year-in, year-out NCAA tournament team, which, based on having won one tournament game in 14 years, you would have signed up for that if you were Virginia. And then it turns out that he was able to build an excellent program. You know, I know people like to take shots at the offense, but I do want to point out, you know, when they won the title, they had the number two offense in the country, according to KenPom. In 2016, when, you know, I think, you know, everybody likes to point to that UMBC loss as how did that happen. I like to point to the Elite Eight loss to Syracuse when they were up like 15 points with 10 yeah. minutes to go. You know, that team was a top eight offensive team in KenPom. Made the Elite Eight. So they had some good offenses over the years. It just didn't happen to be really the last couple years in particular. And so, you know, they played at a pace, they had a style, they had an identity. And that's so hard to build. And I think in this current era, so hard to maintain. And I think that when you look at it, it makes a lot of sense that might be something that you know, you sort of stare at and go, you know, this is getting tougher for sure. But it's still just a remarkable thing that he was able to do down there, building a program that really hadn't been much in the 15 years before he got them there. You know, one other thing I want to point out, you know, Bennett walks away after 15 seasons. You know, Terry Holland, the previous best Virginia basketball coach ever, walked away after 16 seasons at around age 48, 49 or so to begin a career as an athletic director. So there's a little bit of an echo here for a guy that, you know, could have stayed for a long, long time if he'd wanted, and going out not necessarily at the very peak, but certainly as somebody that's had a lot of good teams over the years.
Got less than a minute here, Patrick, but I do want to get your thoughts on, I'm not talking about snarky Twitter guy, you know, the haters, so to speak, but what will be said in terms of, I think when you win a championship, it makes up for the rest of it, but 1-16 loss since the title in 19, they lost in the first round to Ohio, a 13, in the first round to Furman, a 13, and then in that play-in game with Colorado State, I think it was, in 2024 mm-hmm. by like a million points, and they didn't even score 50. I think they had like 13 at halftime or whatever crazy thing that was. I mean, what are people going to say about those things, or does the national championship and what he did for the program that you just pointed out outweigh those things?
Well, let me ask you this. Would you rather be Virginia over the last decade or Gonzaga over the last decade that makes the Sweet 16 every year, has made a couple national titles, but hasn't won a title? You know, I think at the end mm-hmm. of the, I think at the end of the day, people measure that postseason by so, you know, so much that the championship is the answer. And you've got guys like Kyle Guy and, you know, and all these other dudes that were on that fabulous team. You know, they're basically like legends in Charlottesville for life. And so, you know, I kind of look at that as, you know, that's the answer to everything. It's silly that you know, a six-game stretch does that, right? But ultimately, I think that is the legacy, the proof that Virginia could climb the mountain, that system could work, you know. And again, yes, they played great defense, but they had teams that ran incredible offense and plenty of above-average offensive teams. It just didn't show up in the scoring total because of the pace that they played at.
Yeah, I'll take 66-6 over a two-year span that you're talking about there, Patrick. Thank you, buddy. Really appreciate it.
Good info.
Take care.
Thanks, man.
Thank you so much. There's Patrick Stevens of The Post. Get you some quick reaction. The breaking news here on The Fan, stunningly, Tony Bennett retiring as the head coach of Virginia basketball. According to reports, he will make it official and announce it tomorrow at an 11 a.m. press conference just before the start of a brand new season. Patrick thinks it could be the latest of what is a movement
yeah.
of college coaches who just kind of aren't having as much fun anymore and don't want to keep dealing with it. We should get into that because that's not just happening in basketball.
That's right.
Happening in football and everywhere else. Early next hour, we'll pivot back to the Commanders as well. What is your level of concern as they are heavy favorites against Carolina about a letdown spot here? But let's see if anyone wants to hop in on this. 800-636-1067. There is a clear movement of coaches that are not enjoying coaching to the same extent, and they are leaving earlier. Do you blame them? And what do you make of that? This is The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.